in the final topic that we have in our list is that of the teachers. There's a couple things that we should be concerned with. In the West, we have this idea of competition. And competition and things of a proprietary nature. So we get very stuck on this one thing here. We'll pay attention to that and ignore everything else. We do this, and I mean in our politics especially, right? They have this whole thing called partisanship. So even if a guy on the other side of the aisle is going to, let's say he presents fantastic ideas that you agree with, you can't go along with him because he's on the other side of the aisle. And so we draw these lines very harshly. A lot of times we see that in religion as well. If this is your religion, you don't pay attention to any other religion whatsoever. And sometimes we take it so far as we say, we're not even going to validate another religion. It's only this one and that's it. And within that one, we don't like anybody that doesn't have the same bumper sticker that we have. I find it very sad, but at the same time humorous, how even within the Christian community, our largest community in the United States, they all don't like each other. They don't like each other so much so that they split even their own camp. Who in here was Lutheran? You? You. How many Lutheran groups are there?
Well, Lutheran is just one of many Protestant groups.
Yeah, but I mean, of Lutherans.
Yeah, I mean, I
they've split themselves
Lutheran,
up, right?
But yeah, I mean, there's different
branches of it.
Kind of, yeah.
You know, they have one, they have got something like the Missouri group, and then they have it's a Missouri group, then there's some other group, and then there's one with all these initials. And so each one of these, they all hate each other. One is like, oh, well, we're the Orthodox one. Those guys are liberal and know nothing. And then another group is like, oh, those guys are too, you know, and they're all over themselves. Just when you drive around, you'll see, well, this is the first church of, well, where's the 5, 6, and 7? Because, I mean, they're out there, right? Because everybody keeps breaking off from everything. We have to be we have to be careful with this in an intelligent way. Of course, when we take refuge, we are vowing to follow the teachings of the Buddha, follow the Buddha, and follow his ordained Sangha. And we make those our primary path and information. It doesn't mean that we run around rejecting all of them. And I'm pretty sure all of you understand that now. We don't do that. But then when we look at our microscopic level of Buddhism, we have all these branches of Buddhism. And we do have the same problem. Right? You have this Vajrayana group, and within the Vajrayana group, each group kind of has its own thing, and there's conflict within them, even though they like to say there isn't. There definitely is. And in the Himalayas, less than 200 years ago, they actually had wars with each other. Like the Sakyas would go to war against the Nyingma. And they'd battle like villages would have these crazy little wars, right? I mean, it's completely stupid, but this is what they would do. Then you have a whole another bigger thing, Mahayana. And the Mahayana, they look at the Vajrayana and go, those guys, you know, they're out there, and so we don't want anything to do with them. So Zenists don't tend to have anything to do with anyone in the yoga tradition. Then you have the whole forest tradition, who are like the Mahayana are wacky, and the Vajrayana aren't even Buddhist. That's just some kind of way out there crazy cult. So even within Buddhism, we have all of this this mess. Those are the opinions of the unlearned. Those are the views of non-Buddhists. I don't care what kind of huge title, fancy hat, big seat, or any fucking thing those people have. People that teach like that are not Buddhist. Period. And I really don't care who they are. They are not Buddhist. I'd love to have a conversation with them because it's bullshit. When it comes down to us, we have to be careful we don't do the exact same thing. Whatever tradition that you are following, whatever lineage, whatever you want to call it, your school or whatever, you're following it because that specific flavor makes sense to you. It is being the Dharma is being presented in a way that you are able to digest it and understand its actual meaning. I mean, assuming that you're a real student. Hopefully you're not in it because it's got really cool uniforms and crap like that. I mean, generally it's, I'm into this school because this makes the most sense. So if we narrow that down and you're in your own specific school and lineage, the next thing to be very, very careful about, first we have to recognize, this one makes sense to me. Those people that are not in my same school or lineage, they are in their own respectively because it makes sense to them. And there's nothing that needs to be validated and there's nothing that needs to be dismissed. That's all it comes down to. The Buddha did the exact same thing in the sutras. In one sutra, he'll talk to a group of people in a certain way. He goes to another entire village or town, and he talks to them a whole different way. Why? Because one group, they need it like this. This group over here, they need it like that. Does that mean Shakyamuni Buddha is full of shit because he has two different teachings for two different groups? Of course not. It's wisdom and skillful means in action. So we as practitioners are supposed to see other schools like that. Does that mean that we follow what they say? Absolutely not. If somebody says, hey, you have to wear this color robe or this kind of hat or you ring this kind of bell or you don't do any music at all and it's not your school, you say, well, that's great that that's your training. That's not our lineage. That's the end of it. There's no you're right or wrong. It's just, if that's working for you, then that's fantastic. And that should be a heartfelt thing. I'm very excited when I meet people from other traditions, especially when they're very intelligent. If they're stupid, it just makes me a little, it makes me depressed. And I think, oh my God, what the, you're in the wrong camp, because if this is how you're behaving, setting up this school against that school, it means you don't understand anything that your school is teaching. The best is when you run into somebody and they're, oh yeah, this is my tradition. You go, oh, that's great, this is my tradition. And they go, wow, it's fantastic. You guys have some really cool stuff over there, man. yeah, so do you guys. You know, I like your hat, man. That's very cool, right? That's it. There should be this camaraderie and a unifying thing, because the reality is you're all following one actual guru. You're all following Shakyamuni Buddha. No legitimate Buddhist should ever dare to say something negative about their own guru's community. I mean, what? You're going to walk up to Shakyamuni Buddha and say, you see this group over here that you're teaching them? I don't like what they're doing. Who would have the nerve to go to Shakyamuni Buddha and say that? Somebody did in the sutra. You should read it and see what happened. The Buddha blasted them. And actually told them that if they didn't do this huge... he just rails them. And then he tells them, look, if you don't do this huge... purification practice and reverse all of this karma, if you let that kind of sit in, you'll burn in the lowest Avicii hell for thousands of lifetimes for this. Because this is a slandering of the guru. You can't do that. Which is a great segue into something else. Of course, Center for American Buddhist Practice, I want to be very, very clear, is not a guru-based system. It will never be a guru-based system, and there are no gurus in the Center for American Buddhist Practice because it is modeled after the Chan system. The Chan system does have gurus, but the primary guru that they always refer you back to is Shakyamuni Buddha. So, for the Center for American Buddhist Practice, there's only one actual guru, Shakyamuni Buddha. There's no living representation of that guru other than the sutras. And they have priests, the ordained community, that are the agents of that representation. That's it. That does not ban you from going and getting a personal teacher. In fact, I'm of the strong opinion that it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to attain enlightenment without a direct, personal, one-on-one teacher. I don't see it. Maybe there's something in the Chan that will do that. Quite possible. I'm not going to argue with the founders of CAB because it worked for them. I worked for them because I believe in what the whole system is, not only part of it. I do believe in the whole system of CAB. I think CAB is one of the greatest ideas for a Western approach. I just think on the side, you should probably have a personal teacher. If you have that kind of causes and conditions. That's not for everyone, I will say that, because... holy crap, is it dangerous, and it's nasty. It can be very, very brutal. well, I shouldn't say can be. If you're doing it right, it is. Period. It's rough. That being said, anybody know what the actual definition of a guru is? Like a legitimate definition. Does anyone know what it is? You look it up in the Sanskrit Oxford Dictionary of Sanskrit, right? What would guru say? Anyone know? See, John's quick. He's on there. He's looking it up.
each syllable means something. Gu means something, and ru means something. I think it's one who lights up.
Yeah?
The world for you.
That's right. What does that mean? All right, I'll tell you. No one wants to guess other than that. A guru is an avatar. It means that they are an actual, physical, living, breathing embodiment of that thing. What is that thing? For us, we call it the Buddha nature. Tathagata Garbha. It is whatever Shakyamuni is beyond his little entrapment of a human form. The Buddha mind itself. In the Vajrayana, we have a cosmic Buddha, which is Samantabhadra and Samantabhadri. Put together, that's it. That's our thing. They don't exist as individuals. They are just the entire principle. That principle, for us to have any way of ever becoming enlightened, we have to somehow come in contact with enlightenment. If we can't come in contact with enlightenment, the only thing we get is a crazy academic philosophical concept. Like talking about what life on Pluto would be like. We could attempt to qualify it with all kinds of scientific data, which we find out all the time that our scientific data is horribly faulty. It only works for a short amount of time, then we got to change it. Which won't work if you're trying to figure out enlightenment. If you have a faulty science for enlightenment, you'll never figure out what enlightenment even is. So how are you going to attain it? So this great cosmic principle decides to do a thing called invent awakened ones. And so this concept of awakened ones arises within our mind stream. Means we're able to perceive them. Remember, it's our own mind generating this. Think Diamond Sutra. I'm not giving you guys some weird metaphysics stuff. This is how this works. So the Buddhas, the awakened ones, arise in your mind stream. They appear to you in a form to demonstrate enlightenment. When they do their bodhisattvic activity, they appear to you in a Buddha form with a bodhisattvic mission of guiding you to the very thing that they are. That is a guru. So now here's the tongue-in-cheek part. Center for American Buddhist Practice does not have a guru system. But anything that is teaching you the Dharma that leads you to peace, nirvana, enlightenment is in fact a guru, whether you like it or not. All gurus, whether they are talking to you or they are not talking to you and talking to someone else, are all of the exact same essence. Because there is only one of them. There is only one unique principle. That unique principle is so intelligent that it manifests, I'm going to quote the text here, some of you may recognize it, that manifests in any way whatsoever to tame in any way possible all of us sentient beings. So when you encounter a teacher, there is one or 10 or 15 that are specifically for you. I mean, some of us have a lot. Some of us only have one or two. I think I'm on six. So, you have, they're going to keep coming to you. And actually, as a teacher, one of the things that we're told is, just like the sutra said, our charge is to teach everything I know. All of it. I have to teach you everything that I know to the extent that you can do it minimally as well as I do. Preferably better than I do. And once that's accomplished, I'm out. I'm done. And we will no longer have any kind of connection. I mean, maybe like a, maybe a nostalgic one, but not there. It's done. And so what happens? I, as a manifestation, dissolve. Because you no longer need that hologram or that illusion, because it's done. So now it gets withdrawn, and the enlightened principle creates another one that's going to take you further than that previous one. Does it mean that you lost your guru? Not if you understand anything that I'm telling you. They are all the exact same thing. There's not many. We were talking about yesterday, we had a little running joke as a demonstration on something. Anybody seen that movie Men in Black? Mm-hmm. Right? About the aliens and all of that. And there's apparently a cosmic cockroach that comes to Earth and wants to cause all kinds of problems. But to fit in, because he knows, then walking around the street as a giant cockroach is not a good idea to accomplish his goal. It's a really terrible idea. So, does anybody remember what he does?
Doesn't he take on the form of like a big, fat, stinky trucker?
Yeah, he gets some guy and he takes that guy and he turns him into a suit. And so he like wears him. And so there's this funny line where, you know, the men in black, they're asking this woman, you know, well, did you notice anything wrong with him? And she's like, well, yeah. It's like, it wasn't really him. It's like he was wearing an Edgar suit. Right? Because she asked him, what's wrong with your skin? And he goes, pulls his hair back, you know, and his skin goes tight. Is this better? Edgar suit. The enlightened principle just wears all kinds of suits. They wear a Karmapa suit. They wear a Master Senyun suit. They wear a Venerable Tom suit. They wear a dude at the gas station suit. They wear your horrible neighbor who seems to hate you suit. They wear your cat suit. They wear the bird that wakes you up in the morning suit. They wear all kinds of suits. But it's only one giant principle. Who just keeps putting on the different suits in order to magnetize you to your own nature. What I'm getting at is we always, always, always respect all the teachers equally. Does that mean you have to follow what all of them say? Of course not, because the one that has come to you specifically is the only one you need to pay attention to. The other ones will distract you, because you're not in that camp. For example, if I'm colorblind and I can only see the colors blue and white, that's all I can perceive. Going to a teacher that only teaches in red won't help me. So if I run into one, because a teacher in the red comes to town, and I go and visit him, and he says, oh, I see you're doing a bunch in blue and white. You know, if you do red or pink, it's way better. Well, that would be terrible for you to go home and try and do red or pink, because you'd be doing black and wouldn't even know it was red. Because you can't see anything other than blue or white. So, you don't disrespect that teacher. You recognize that that emanation is working for a specific group. It's working with the ones in red. When yours comes, you have one that teaches in white, you have one that teaches in blue, and you have another one that teaches in blue and white. And so you work with them. Not the ones that do yellow and blue, just blue and white. On the outward aspect, and this is the important point, on the outward aspect, we treat all of them equally. The only time you don't treat teachers equally is if your own is in the company of those that are not yours. That's the only time. How many of you had the opportunity to meet my teacher, Lama Jigme Jimpo? Right. You see what happened when Lama Jinpa came? Everybody shows high respect to him. That's because that's our parental line. But if another teacher comes, I mean, you know, other than somebody that's really spectacular, like if we had the head of a lineage come, that's very important. So they get a special thing because, you know, they're holding a higher office, so to speak. But at the same time, you prostrate to your own teacher rather than them, even though they're higher. But when that teacher comes in and out of the room, you stand up. You show everything to that teacher as if it's your teacher. Because the saying is, all the teachers are exactly the same. So on the outer, we show all that. On the inner, we do everything directly with our own teacher. So when you go visit somewhere, give offerings to that teacher. When your own teacher comes, give offerings to that teacher. If your teacher and another teacher in the same room, give offerings to both, because it's the same person. This is what the Buddha was trying to establish in the creation of the Sangha. Even if you don't like that teacher's teachings or his methods, doesn't matter. That's still an emanation that's leading others to enlightenment. The only time that this does not apply is if you know for a fact the teacher is a charlatan. Unless, of course, the teacher openly says, I'm a fake and a fraud, and you still choose to follow them, then that's up to you. Because I tell you that all the time. I mean, I'm horribly foolish because I'm only trying to be like my teacher, and I'm nowhere near that. So if you still choose to follow me, then that's on you. Which is the same thing my teacher surprisingly tells me. If you really want to follow me, then that's your own problem. It's like, well, who else am I going to follow? Your master's gone. Can't follow Kala Rinpoche. What else am I supposed to do? Anyhow, this is important. And I want you guys to remember this, that the Sangha is not something to be slighted by any means. It's something that deserves the highest respect at all times, no matter what. Even if you don't agree with them. If for some reason you are told this group has been excommunicated or this group is not authentic, that's the only time that this doesn't count. Because then they really are not part of the Sangha. But as long as we know them to be Sangha, we have to be very careful how we approach this. Alright, so let's do... let's do our Adarnia of Great Compassion.